From KPFK, Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As the latest Conference of Parties, or COP25 meeting on climate change, continues into its second week in Madrid, Spain, indigenous communities from around the world have taken a lead on the ground. Representatives from native communities globally are leading civil society groups in demanding a respect for their rights and the land. Among them are indigenous women, who are demanding justice for missing and murdered indigenous women and girls and linking that phenomenon to the fossil fuel industry. We go now to Madrid to speak with Ozawa Benishi Albert. She's the movement building coordinator with the Indigenous Environmental Network. Welcome to the program, Benishi.
Thanks. You very much for having me this evening.
So first, can you explain for us what exactly you mean when we talk about missing and murdered indigenous women, whether this is a global phenomenon or one that's primarily a U.S. or North American phenomenon?
This is a phenomenon that's been going on for some time. There's definitely a critical crisis moment that is happening in North America, particularly in the northern states of the United States and in Canada. However, the occurrence of women going missing from their communities, particularly around fossil fuel industries, has been happening through the Americas for some time.
So it's primarily a North American phenomenon.
Not exclusively, but, you know, from the perspective that I can share is from North America and what is happening there. But we have seen in many other countries where women activists, women community leaders, even sometimes are under threat when they're standing up to fight for their rights in their communities. But the idea that women are resources to be consumed, that's been an ongoing thing for some time, and it's one of the key components of colonialism. And we're in this new age today with eco-colonialism, and so it is a occurrence that happens along with many indigenous peoples in the Americas. I can speak primarily to what's happening in North America and what the industry is there. Because we've been seeing a higher incidence happening in various sort of tracked communities.
Right. And so I definitely want to get to that. There are, over the years, there have been thousands of indigenous women that have gone missing or that have been found to be murdered. And I understand that a big part of the issue is that the government, the U.S. federal government, doesn't even recognize the majority of those, have not tracked them or done very much about them. Although in recent days, there has been some movement on legislation that maybe we can talk about later. But how do you link it to the fossil fuel industry? You're in Madrid, Spain, at the Conference of Parties, which is the main international United Nations conference on tackling climate change. Why is this phenomenon of missing and murdered indigenous women linked to the same industry that's destroying our atmosphere, our climate?
You know, if you think about what we're saying around eco-colonialism, it's the new generation of colonialism and the same sort of mindset that says the land can be exploited for our use, for profit, for exploitation, that violence that happens to Mother Earth, that same mindset creates the conditions that make it easy to see indigenous women of lesser than or are resources to be consumed. And so that's when you can see violence start happening to women, to indigenous women, girls, trans, LGBT community. It becomes then a risky situation to live in a time where people devalue Mother Earth and devalue indigenous women.
And so do you link also the violence facing indigenous women to some of the labor, if you will, that is employed by the fossil fuel industry in some of these extractive arenas?
I will tell you, there's many communities who live along or adjacent to oil fields, or where there are man camps, that it is come to a time where people have to be careful and women have to be careful, and are being told that because there are sometimes some of the places that women are going missing. In Canada, there's a whole highway that, you know, that a lot of women have come missing from. And so those places are there. And when you start to think about like where those industries are situated and link the occurrences of women going missing or violence happening to them or being murdered, then you can start seeing the connections. But if you don't live in those communities, many people don't see that connection. But for the Indigenous communities who are living alongside those facilities and whose lands are being impacted by, you know, pipelines and mining and fracking and drilling, those communities are living very closely and they can see that happening. They can see the relationship. But because many countries, Canada and U.S., are not tracking that data in significant ways, it's hard to make those connections. But for the communities who are living close to or adjacent to those industries, they absolutely can see the connections very clearly.
So there are primarily sort of male majority labor forces that are brought into these extractive industries to work in these extractive industries, and often these extractive industries that are located alongside Indigenous communities, it's women that are feeling the impact. I'm sort of reminded of the impact of, you know, foreign troops in different countries where women who are located next to primarily male military bases are often facing sexual violence, you know, so sort of a similar, maybe a small analogy can be drawn there.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I'm saying that the occurrence of Indigenous women coming up missing or disappeared, or attacks or violence happening to them, that's something that's been occurring for some time. And like the example you gave, you know, many countries, many Indigenous women of the Global South have also felt the effects of some of those occurrences. And similarly, state government not wanting to pay a great deal of attention to it.
So in the United States, you're currently in Madrid, but you're based, I understand, of course, in the United States. And there has recently been a moving forward to the Senate floor of a bill that was sponsored by Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico about the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women that will finally advance to the Senate floor. There was a vote on November 20th. How important is this legislation? And is it significant in that have we seen something like this move to the Senate floor before?
I think it's an important step, legislation, and it's definitely a step in the right direction. And it took a lot of effort from grassroots communities to really push for elected leaders to pay attention to what was going on, because it's a public crisis. Just because it's happening to a particular group of people doesn't mean that it's not a public crisis, that the people are still part of the public and our elected officials should respond thusly. Our public safety agency should be responding, that our national security agency should be tracking and collecting data. And yet it was Indigenous communities and Indigenous women who first started a database of missing and murdered Indigenous women in the United States. Some states are finally starting to do some tracking in North Dakota and in some of the northern states. They're finally starting to do that, and I applaud them for doing that, but we are dealing with a national crisis, and it should be held at a national level. So I think that, you know, the legislation is a step in the right direction, and I still think we need to do more.
Does the presence of Indigenous communities at these COP meetings result in the kind of attention that needs to happen or needs to take place on how the fossil fuel industry is actually impacting human beings? It seems as though a lot of communities, vulnerable communities and marginalized communities, who for years had been pushed out of the climate movement, are really making themselves be heard today more so than ever before, and are able to draw attention to these issues.
Well, that's the hope that we have for being here. I mean, Indigenous communities have come from across the world to be here, and, you know, they're all sharing what is happening to them in their communities at the hands of fossil fuel industries, industries around nuclear or, hydroelectric power. These are communities who are being impacted today, you know, by these industries. Even though the COP is about climate change and what's going to be happening, many Indigenous communities have been dealing with the impacts of climate change for a long time already. And those impacts have been from the sources of the climate shift that we're dealing with and the sources of carbon emissions from those industries. So yes, there's Indigenous people from all across South America, Central America, North America. We have, you know, our delegation includes people from Alaska all the way to Brazil. And there's Indigenous peoples here represented from all across the world, from Africa, from islands, from, you know, even the Sami here in Europe. And they're saying, listen, something like we need to take serious issue, and we need to like take this seriously what's happening, because it's happening to Indigenous people right now, and we're dealing with the effects right now. It is not a future problem or something that's going to happen later, but it's happening now, and it's impacting communities now. So yes, we are trying to use this opportunity where there's representation from different world leaders, both grassroots leadership and state leadership, to hear the issues and to hear what is going on, and to know that we want to share with them not only the crisis of what's happening to Indigenous women, but what's happening to Indigenous communities in regards to climate change.
So, of course, the Indigenous wisdom on the solutions to the climate crisis have also, I imagine, been raised. It's been, you know, that has been one of the main reasons, I think, also why Indigenous communities have been at the forefront of movements in recent years here in the United States, right? That there are solutions to the climate crisis or out of the climate crisis that Indigenous communities have known forever and that need to be adopted on a wide basis, or at least some version of them, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there are Indigenous people who are sharing lots of solutions here, but we're also here standing against some of the solutions that are being proposed by many of the world governments that are false solutions.
Such
false
as?
False solutions around carbon markets. Mm. Such as carbon markets and the idea that we can keep creating carbon, but that if you find a place to store it or sink it, that we're going to resolve our climate crisis. We're in a point in time where we need to stop producing the amount of carbon that we are, and we need to start at the sources that are producing the most. Mm-hmm. And from the perspective of many Indigenous communities, that is the fossil fuel industry. And yet they hold much of the space here to say, oh, well, the solutions are let's do carbon markets and we'll just offset our carbon pollution, instead of saying we're going to reduce pollution. And so Indigenous peoples here are, yes, promoting and supporting and sharing and sharing ideas about solutions with each other and with their world governments, but they're also standing against false solutions like carbon markets.
Now, Tuesday, December 10th is International Human Rights Day. It's also the day, I understand, that the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women is going to be raised in Madrid, where you are, for the COP25. You and I are speaking ahead of that event taking place. Can you tell me a little bit about what's expected to happen Tuesday?
So we have a group of Indigenous people, Indigenous women who are going to stand together and bring awareness of the issue, but really to honor the women that have been lost. And we're going to do that. And many of the Indigenous women are coming dressed in red dresses. They're traditional. Many of them are coming dressed in their traditional dresses. And to share both the issue, but also to share the strength and resilience of our women, and to offer song for the women who have been lost. And so we're doing that as an Indigenous delegation, and joined with other folks who are struggling, who are supporting the rights of Indigenous people, who are supporting the rights of people of color, and who are supporting what it means to have, a community, a healthy community that is supporting and engaging in climate solutions that will benefit all of us. We have some other folks who are standing with us in this action.
What are the connections that are being made with Indigenous communities from around the world? Because I know that a lot of these international gatherings are such great spaces for civil society groups who are on the outside often of the proceedings and of the negotiations to touch base with one another, to form ties with one another, and to express solidarity with one another. Can you give me a sense of what that outside movement, the movement outside the halls of power, has been among various Indigenous groups from around the world? I mean, I understand that as you and I are speaking, there are actions taking place by Indigenous communities from Brazil's Amazon who are fighting to preserve this really critical space and land for all of us. So are you making those connections?
Absolutely. There's a couple of spaces that are happening here, social movement spaces that are happening outside of COP. And we've been participating in them, both in doing workshops and connecting with other people's workshops and connections. There's been lots of volunteers who have come to help with translation to make sure that we can have the connections and the discussions and dialogues needed to build relationship and solidarity with each other. There's been lots of reaching out for asking for support to different actions. Showing up at other people's actions when they ask us to, and folks coming to the actions when we call for action. There was an action with the Indigenous people from Canada against the tech mine in Canada, and lots of people came to support that action, whether or not they lived in Canada or not. Lots of people came to support and are sharing that word. People were standing with the Indigenous peoples of Brazil. And so there are many opportunities for action, and there's also lots of opportunities for learning that are happening in these spaces.
Are you at all hopeful about the discussions and where they are leading? Because the broader context of all of this was that the very modest agreement that the world's nations came to 4 years ago is supposed to be getting implemented then right after the Trump administration came to power. President Trump took actions to pull the U.S. out of that agreement. So within that broader framework, is there any positive direction to the proceedings inside the halls of power, as far as you can tell?
I wish I could tell you I was more optimistic. I think people are still holding the line. And they're going to continue to do that. And the inspiration comes from the people standing and still standing for as long as possible as the negotiations are happening. They have removed much of the language that in regards to the rights of Indigenous people. They have removed much of the language in regards to human rights of all of the people of the world. But people are still standing in some of those negotiations and trying to push for that to continue to be included. And so the hope and the optimism comes from, you know, the relationship with the grassroots communities who are here trying to make sure that our voices continue to be heard, even though the negotiations are going in a much different direction than we would hope they would be. And even still, you know, as ambitious as some people felt the Paris Agreement was, I mean, even as you say, it was a modest agreement in terms of the measures that were going to be protecting people and the measures that were going to be in the reductions of carbon. Like, it was still very modest. And we want, as Indigenous people, we wanted more. We wanted stronger measures. We wanted accountability measures. We wanted measures to make sure that governments were held to make those things happen. And yet there was not enough teeth in it so that someone like Trump could say, oh, it's not, like, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that anymore, and we're opting out. And so hopefully, you know, things are going to change in the country. Things are going to change with the other countries. We see movements happening all across the world where people are finally standing up and standing up against their governments to say, this is a crisis. We need to address it in much more aggressive ways than we are right now. We should not be arguing about carbon markets. And instead, we should be negotiating how aggressively we can be reducing carbon emissions.
And Indigenous communities are not just on the front lines of trying to offer solutions, but often paying the price of the climate crisis, particularly in island nations in the global south. We also, of course, have our very own island nations in North America here that where Indigenous communities are impacted. The rising sea levels impacts them directly as well. And so, unfortunately, of course, these vulnerable communities are often left out of the discussions, may have the solutions, and are most directly impacted. What do you hope, when you come back to the United States, what do you hope to see on the ground in the U.S. outside of these COP meetings to take climate action? We've seen some incredible youth-led movements, the Fridays for Future movements that originated in Sweden but have taken hold around the world now. What do you hope can happen outside of the framework of the COP?
What I hope is that we can continue to build the kind of solutions in our communities that's happening locally. Those are happening in smaller communities. I hope that we can continue to like build on those, lift them up, share them with other communities so that it starts happening in other places, and that we find ways to hold the corporations accountable and hold the corporations accountable for the crisis that they're creating, and that we hold elected officials accountable to make sure that they're holding the corporations accountable. And so, you know, that's going to take a shift of political will. It's going to take a shift in how corporations are recognized in many of the countries that we come from. I mean, coming from the United States, that corporations are recognized as people. And yet when you have a massive amounts of real people saying we need to address this in a much different way, we are often not the voices being heard. And I think that's going to continue to shift as people are making connections across movements, across communities, across race, across gender, across class, across national borders. That is going to continue to change. And I'm optimistic that we're going to continue to do that through the work of organizations, through the work of coalitions. We're part of a larger coalition called It Takes Roots, which is made up of four other network coalitions similar to ours. And there's more and more of those happening, both in the United States and in other countries, where people are sort of banding together their efforts to say, we need to like join our efforts together, our resources together, our people together, to stand against the corporations making decisions about the health of our communities.
Give out a website, Bineshi, where people can find out more about your organization, Indigenous Environmental Network.
Yes, our website is www.ienearth.org. You can find us on social media at IENEarth. And also Indigenous Rising Media. And those are the places you can find us, along with It Takes Roots. which is a coalition of four other coalitions, Grassroots Global Justice, Right to the City, and Climate Justice Alliance, along with the Indigenous Environmental Network.
And we'll post a link to the website and other sites from ours as well later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Ozawa Benishi Albert. She's the Movement Building Coordinator with the Indigenous Environmental Network, speaking to us from Madrid, Spain. We've been discussing the COP25 climate meeting and how Indigenous women are demanding justice for the murdered and missing Indigenous women, as well as other issues. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our Vimeo channel, and our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.